I looked over at the Slines. Back in the rotunda, they had spent some time speculating as to the size of certain parts of the anatomy of Canoas, which were hidden under a fold of his garment, and then gotten into a debate as to which they fancied more, Deot, who was conveniently kneeling, or Hylea, who was beginning to take her clothes off. In this chamber, they had gathered beneath the most prominent fresco, which depicted a furious, dark-bearded man charging down the steps of the temple, swinging a rake, striking terror in a group of deranged, eye-rolling dice players. It was clear that the Slines loved this picture. So far, they had seemed docile enough. So I drew closer to them and explained it. "That's Dyax. He was famous for his disciplined thought. He became more and more distressed by the way Orathena was being infiltrated by enthusiasts. Those were people who misunderstood how the Orathenans used numbers. They dreamed up all kinds of crazy number-worshipping stuff. One day Dyax was coming out of the temple after the singing of the anathem, when he saw these guys casting fortunes using dice. He was so furious that he grabbed a rake from a gardener and used it to drive the enthusiasts out of the temple. After that, he ran the place. He coined the term Theorics, and his followers called themselves Theors to distinguish themselves from the enthusiasts. Dyax said something that is still very important to us, which is that you should not believe a thing only because you like to believe it. We call that Dyax's rake, and sometimes we repeat it to ourselves as a reminder not to let subjective emotions cloud our judgment. This explanation was too long for the four Slines, who turned their backs to me as soon as I got past the rake fight. I noticed that one of them, the one with his arm in a sling, had a curious bony ridge running up his spine and protruding a few inches above the collar of his jersey. Normally, this was concealed by his trailing burnous, but when he turned away from me, I saw it clearly. It was like a second exoskeletal spine attached to the natural one. At its top was a rectangular tab, smaller than the palm of my hand, bearing a kinogram in which a large stick figure struck a smaller one with his fist. It was one of the spine clamps Quinn had described to me in Orlo. I guessed it had disabled the man's right arm. A fresco on the ceiling at the far end showed the eruption of Ekba and the destruction of the temple. The following series of galleries contained pictures and artifacts from the ensuing Peregrine period, with separate alcoves dedicated to the 40 lesser and the 7 great Peregrines. From there we came out into the great elliptical chamber with its statues and frescoes of the Theoric Golden Age centered on the city-state of Ethras. Protus, gazing up at the clouds painted on the ceiling, anchored one end. His teacher, Telenes, commanded the other, striding across the plain with his interlocutors, variously awed, charmed, chastened, or indignant. The two bringing up the rear had their heads together, conspiring, a foreshadowing of Telenes' trial and ritual execution. A large painting of the city made it easy for me to point out the Deolaters' temples atop its highest hill, where Telenes had been put to death. Its market, the Paracline, wrapped around the hill's base. A flat open area in the center of the Paracline, called the Plain, where geometers would draw figures in the dust or engage in public debate, and the vine-covered bowers around the edges, in whose shade some Theors would teach their fills, from which we got the word suvin, meaning under the vines. As far as the nun was concerned, that one moment made the whole trip worth the trouble. As we worked our way to the farther end, we began seeing Theors standing at the right hands of generals and emperors, which led naturally enough to the last of the great chambers in the Hylian Way, which was all about the glory that was Baz, its temples, its capital, its walls, roads, and armies, its library, and, increasingly as we approached the end, its ark. After a certain point, it was priests and prelates of the Ark of Baz instead of Theors advising those generals and emperors. Theors had to be sought out as small figures in the deep background, reclining on the steps of the library or going into the capital to spill wise counsel into the dead ears of the high and mighty. Frescoes depicting the sack of Baz and the burning of the library flanked the exit, an incongruously narrow, austere archway that you might miss if it weren't for the statue of Sant Cartas, cradling a few singed and tattered books in one arm, looking back over her shoulder to beckon us toward the exit. This led to a high stone-walled chamber, devoid of decoration and containing nothing except air. It symbolized the retreat to the Maths and the dawn of the Old Mathic Age, generally pegged at negative 1512. From there, the Hylian Way took a lap around the Unarian cloister and petered out. There was room on the other side where exhibits might one day be added about the rise of the Mystagogues, the Rebirth, the Praxic Age, and possibly even the Harbingers and the Terrible Events. But we had seen all the good stuff, and this was customarily the end of the tour. I thanked them all for coming, invited them to backtrack if they wanted to spend more time with any of what they had seen, reminded them that all were welcome at the 10th night supper, and told them I'd be happy to answer questions. The Slines seemed happy, for now, to savor the pictures of Imperial Bayesian galley combat and library burning. A retired burgher stepped up to thank me for my time. The Suvin kids asked me what sorts of things I had been studying lately. The two visitors who had rushed in at the last minute bided their time as I tried to explain to the kids certain theoretical topics that they had never heard of. After a minute, the nun took pity on me, or possibly on the kids, and hustled them away.